You're listening to CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager of Yeager CPA Review. In this episode, he interviews Eva Rosenberg, better known as the Tax Mama, and author of The Trump Tax Cut. She talks a little bit about taxes and what she does to help everyday people get answers to their tax questions. If you're in the market for a CPA review course, check out what Yeager CPA Review has to offer. Use promo code PODCAST to take advantage of 15% off all access course bundles at checkout at YeagerCPAReview.com.
Good day, everyone. How are you today on this overcast day here on the East Coast? But it's going to be a wonderful blue sky day because today I have a terrific guest. I mean, this person, I met her 13 years ago, and she came to Maryland, and actually she lives in Do you live in Los Angeles, Eva?
I do. I live in sunny California today.
Sunny California, which we really don't want to hear about. but Eva is, and I was talking to her before we got on the air, she's one of the nicest people you'd ever want to meet. Nicest people. I mean, I've been very fortunate to know her. And I hope maybe one day you might even meet her if you're out there in Los Angeles and you want to take the enrolled agent exam. But anyway, I have on today Eva Rosenberg. Eva, how are you?
I am great and happy tax season, Phil.
Well, thank God, Eva, I don't do tax returns anymore. You know, not that I don't miss it, you know, sort of like having a rash, but no, I don't miss it at all. And Eva, I'm going to talk about a few things here. I actually have part of your biography here from the internet. But I wanted to mention, because I was all excited about this, we had to rewrite our CPA review books. Because of the Trump Tax Cut Act. And, you know, I started doing this early on before there was really any interpretations or anything. And I signed up with Amazon to get your book, The Trump Tax Cut Act. All right. And by the way, it is available on Amazon. It's The Trump Tax Cut. By the way, if you want a simplified explanation of these changes in this confusing tax code, all right, you can get Eva's book from Amazon. Where else can they get it, Eva?
Well, they can get it anywhere, pretty much. But let me tell you something, a little secret that isn't in the book. My publisher left out a lot of stuff. And so all of the resources, which really are what make the book and back everything up, aren't in the book. And so I set up a website. It is TrumpTaxPlanBook.com, and anybody who buys the book, which is in print or in audio, can pick up all of that as handouts. We're putting the updates in there. There's a glossary in there. So there are resources there that aren't actually in the book to supplement the useful but missing information.
Well, also, if you're studying for the CPA exam, all right, which has been my area, obviously, I would recommend, because a lot of you know, we rewrote our book with the act in it. But if you want a simplified explanation, I would say it's the best investment you can make. And it's The Trump Tax Act by Eva Rosenberg. So, you know, give it a look. What do you got to lose? It might even help you pass the exam with a higher score. So, and also, Eva, you've published other books. I notice here, Deduct Everything, is that still available for purchase?
Well, the Deduct Everything is available, but that is really the Trump Tax Cut book, which is updated. It's an updated version of Deduct Everything, and we've added the two Trump chapters, which is one for individual and one for business, and I added another chapter about what to do when you get an IRS notice or if you haven't filed for a long time. So I wouldn't waste any money on Deduct Everything right now. The other book that is worthwhile is The Small Business Taxes Made Easy, and that's full of checklists that you can use with your clients to help them set the business up, do a business plan, do tax planning, do exit planning, and a whole bunch of other things. And in fact, I'm starting to teach a series at UCLA, starting with UCLA Extension, starting with the first chapter, the small business checklists.
Well, everything Eva writes is so, and I don't mean this as something negative, but it's made, the tax law is made so simple, the way she explains it in the Trump tax cut. By the way, I do not get kickbacks for this. I just want to mention this.
Neither do I.
Eva did this as a nonprofit association. Am I correct, Eva?
No, not exactly. But one of the things that I do take pride in is absolutely everything in my books and my articles is documented and linked to tax code, tax law, publications, if I can't find anything else to link it to. So everything is sourced. And if I have any errors, well, you know, people tell me, and I'm very happy to reward them and praise them and give them credit for finding the errors. So, you know, taxes are a very big topic. In fact, may I tell you what I'm doing right now?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
You know, in teaching the EA exam review, one of the important things is,
explain the EA exam to people who don't know what it is.
CPA exam, you are very familiar with because your instructors and everybody in school tells you all about how to become a CPA. The best kept secret in the industry is the enrolled agent designation. This is something you get from the Internal Revenue Service, from U.S. Treasury. You get a card from U.S. Treasury. We call it a T card. And it says that you have the highest tax designation, according to the IRS, that the IRS offers. It says that you are the most highly trained tax professionals in the country, and you can get it one of two ways. You can work for the IRS for 5 years in certain capacities, and when you leave, you can apply for it. Or you can do it the hard way, like the rest of us, and sit for three IRS examinations, which are all about tax and representation and ethics and all of those things. And the way they have collapsed four exams into three, it is super hard. And some CPAs actually use the material in the EA exam review tools to help them pass the CPA exam.
Now, I have to tell you, Eva, I've looked at the questions for the enrolled agent exam, and I have to tell you, I think they're a lot harder than there are in the CPA exam. They are really more complicated. So, yes, I think if you could answer the EA questions. By the way, do they release the questions? See, they don't release the questions for the CPA anymore. Do they release the enrolled agent questions?
They used to. And about, I think, 2004, IRS turned the exam over to Prometric, just like the CPA societies have. And since Prometric has taken it over, they don't release the questions. In fact, when you sit down at the computer, you have to sign this affidavit electronically saying that you will not reveal the information on penalty of death or something worse. And so, no, they don't reveal it. They don't want the candidates to reveal it. And yet, I sometimes have people reveal the questions to me legally. If you want to know how, ask me.
Truth serum? Do you use truth serum?
No. No. One of the things that I do is I really advocate for my students, a lot like you do. And if they come across questions that are ambiguous, more than one answer fits the question, or the question is outdated, or there's something seriously wrong with the question, I ask them to run to their car, write it down, let me know what it is, and I will contact IRS and Prometric to examine that and investigate and either remove it or give them credit. And there have been instances where Prometric has agreed, and people who thought they had failed ended up getting credit later on. So everybody who was affected gets the credit for it. So other than that, they're not supposed to reveal the questions or the topics.
Now, with the enrolled agent designation, all right, you're not a CPA. So you go for the EA exam, get the designation. You can represent clients before the IRS. Is that what one of the advantages is of having it?
Yeah, that's the main advantage, is that you can represent clients before any level of the Internal Revenue Service and in any state. So you're recognized by all of the states and all of the local authorities, and the state tax agencies will listen to you and treat you with respect. CPAs, the IRS will work with you no matter what state you're in, so it doesn't matter. But to work with the state agencies, unless you have some reciprocity for your CPA license within the state or you've actually applied, the state agencies won't work with you. So when it comes to taxes, we have more of a universal ability, and something like the CPAs, you're aware, Phil, that CPAs and EAs can sit for the tax court exam.
No, I wasn't aware of that, actually.
Yes, yes. The only two non-attorneys who can sit for the tax court exam are CPAs and enrolled agents, and the exam is offered every other year on even years. So they had one last November. There's going to be one offered again in November of 2020, and a lot of enrolled agents who've gone through and they've been doing all of the studying and now they're excited and thoroughly immersed in being tax nerds will sit for the tax court exam, and very few people pass it. It's a tough exam, so it's even tougher than the CPA or the EA exams. And there's only one person I know who actually teaches a course to prepare people for that exam, and the people who pass, the few people that pass the tax court exam, most of them are her students. And I'm saying few, like 10 or 12 people. Most of them are Cheryl Trovato or Cheryl Gregory's students. So she really has it down to a science.
She teaches for one. I think I saw her for a continuing education class. She lives in where does she live? She told us where she lived, and she was very knowledgeable. I think this is the person.
I think she's here in California somewhere.
Yes, she is, but I'm trying to remember where she told us she lives. But anyway, she was extremely good. I mean, one of the best lecturers I've ever heard.
Yeah, that's why her students, literally only, just about only her students pass the tax court exam. You know, there may be hundreds of people who sit for it, but usually only 10 or 20 pass, and those 90 to 100% of those people who pass are Cheryl's students. So that is a really neat thing. However, little secret, and I know that she and other USTCs, people who've passed the tax credit exam, hate it when I reveal this, that we can practice in tax court without practicing in tax court. And so I teach my EA students, and I'll also in a tax practice series program at CPE Link, I teach my students how to handle a client's tax court case. Because my philosophy is, if you have a case presented, you know, filed in tax court, if you're going to win in tax court and you've done your homework and you have everything prepared, when the case first gets kicked back to appeals, which all tax court cases are, when the case gets kicked to appeals, our power of attorney is recognized. We'll settle it in appeals. If we can't settle it in appeals, we're not going to win in tax court. So every case I have ever handled has settled at the appeals level with no problem.
We know you prepare people for the enrolled agent exam, but you also have a tax practice. Is that correct?
Getting smaller and smaller. I have now sold it 3 times. I am down to my last 20 clients. 3 of them died last year. Otherwise, it would be more than 20. And so
that's hell of a way to get rid of clients, isn't it?
Oh, it's so depressing. It really is. So I'm kind of keeping my hand in and getting a feel for what's going on in the software and the systems. But the better place that I'm getting a really good feel is on taxmama.com, where I answer questions for anybody who wants to ask them for free, only if they post it in the forum. If you send me emails, I will not be answering your questions. But we've answered over 100,000 questions probably in the last 10 years. This is our 20th year of running the free Ask Tax Mama service. And so I get a real feel for what people are dealing with and what their problems and issues are. And they're kind of cycles, you know, get a lot of people who have visas or out of the country have international related questions. People big, right? He took my child on his tax return, and it was really my exemptions. What do I do? That's a real biggie over there, you know. We set up an LLC and never used it, or whatever. There are all kinds of stuff, and they're real people asking real questions. And we don't do the work for people, okay? We point you to where you find the resource and give you ideas and suggestions. And there are a lot of tax professionals who use the service.
One of the things that's on the CPA exam is with the regulation part, which is the taxation. They ask you to do some research, you know, come up with the Internal Revenue Code, the paragraph, section, subsection, whatever. And it's very difficult to practice that. You know, I guess you have to have a service, you know, you have to subscribe to a service to practice that. Is there any way that you could think of that maybe a CPA candidate could practice that type of research without, obviously, they don't work in a CPA firm, but they want to, is there any free service out there that they can go online and practice with? Do you know anybody that offers anything like that?
Funny you should ask. I used to teach a class for CPE Link on how to do tax research online for free. Now that it is owned by CCH and Wolters Kluwer, they cancel that class of mine. I still teach that to my EA folks, and I'm probably going to record that class for Lambers as well. But yes, I do an entire class telling you where all of the different resources are, what they mean, how to use them. It's a 2-hour class. And so, yes, I can show you exactly how to do that without having to spend any money on any of the research services, except maybe $25 for the Blue Book, the summary of the court activity, the congressional activity.
Now, how could they get a hold of that? Can you tell them how you could help them with that? And
you know what? I don't have it set up right now as a standalone class, but if people go to taxmama.com to the forum in there and tell me they want it, I will go and structure a way for them to register just for that. So,
and
yeah,
once again,
I can do that.
All right. Your website is
taxmama.com.
And you have 2 anniversaries this year. You have a 20th anniversary, and that is Tax Mama's, right?
Yes.
And is that the arm that does the enrolled agent?
No, that's just the free website. It's not a nonprofit organization, but it kind of acts like one. This is like my return to the community for all the stuff that people have helped me with. The EA is irsexams.school, and the IRS exams program has been online for 15 years. So this is the 15th anniversary. I started teaching the class at UCLA Extension over 25 years ago because there was such a demand in the community over here in Southern California for an in-depth course for enrolled agents. And, you know, there are a lot of programs out there that will prepare you for the EA exam. And all of them are excellent. I don't know of a bad program out there. But all of them are review programs. They presuppose you already know tax and accounting and representation. They presume that you already have the background. Mine is the only one that's actually a school to teach you all of those things when you walk in knowing nothing.
Now, that's now, how do you present this? Is it online? How do you present your EA review course?
It's live online. It meets for 6 months, starting in May and ending in between September and November, depending on all the different holidays, high holidays, and everything else. This year, it's going to end on October 19th. And it meets on Tuesday and Thursday evening from 4 to 6 p.m. Pacific, which is 7 to 9 p.m. on the East Coast, and Saturday mornings, we ruin your Saturdays, 8 a.m. to noon Pacific, but 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on the East Coast. So we completely mess up your Saturdays, but everything is recorded. So we also have a self-study version of it for people who simply cannot attend the live classes due to work, family, or religious reasons. It's all there and it's all identical.
How do you do that live online? You actually are live and the people can watch it live through their computer?
Yep. We use a conferencing system or two. I subscribe to two different conferencing systems that I can use, either Adobe Connect or WebEx, depending on how much direct voice participation we have in the class. Most of the class is taught in the Adobe Connect system. I am there. People are there. They can use the chat function to ask questions, make funny comments, pick on people. Remember, they're there together for six months. They get to know each other. It's a very personal class. People have relationships they've retained over the decades. And we do the polling. So we also, those classes also provide continuing education credit for NASBA and the IRS. So, you know, those classes, although they prepare for the EA exam, also count towards CE. And there's a lot of interactivity without people actually speaking. And no, I do not use the camera. I use PowerPoints and materials and handouts that they pick up before class, usually between about 50 and 120 pages per class.
And all 50 states give continuing professional education for your course, correct?
Well, through NASBA, they do. Yeah, okay. So any state that that accepts NASBA certifications for CPAs accepts all of my materials.
Very good, good. Doesn't Eva have a great radio voice? I'm telling you, she could be a disc jockey even.
Oh, keep the flattery coming, Phil.
Eva, say this. All right, this was a station in New York. 1010 Winds New York. Can you say that?
1010 Winds New York.
I would hire you. Now, I'd like to go back because Eva, in her biography, of which I copied, she said from the age of 10, she didn't want to be an accountant. She wanted to be an author. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
And at the age of 10, what did you want to write? Did you have any idea what you wanted to write at that age?
Phil, it wasn't going to be taxes. I clue you.
I can understand. It's not the most exciting area. Then.
Not for a 10-year-old. I'll tell you what I wanted to do.
Yes.
What I wanted to do was learn a number of languages and travel around the world and sit with all of the old people and record their stories. Because, you know, in a different age, before this millennium, there were a lot of old people in the family who were passing stories down from one generation to the other, and they're irreplaceable stories, and the current generation isn't interested. In fact, the previous generation wasn't interested. And I'm old enough that I was like the third generation before that. I wanted to catch these stories before they disappeared. So yes, that was what I wanted to do, was record all of that and compile all of the different histories, myths, and so forth, and save them, because there's so much wealth in those stories and culture that we are losing because of the faster age of technology.
That's I wish I had something like that, because, you know, I always say, you know, in the Jewish religion, as you know, we're generally named after someone who has passed away. And I don't even know who I'm named after. And I don't know anything about my grandparents, really where they came from. Did they enter through Ellis Island? I would like to know this stuff. I guess as you get older, at least for me, I want to know about my ancestors. You know, where'd they come from? You know, and I wish that was available. I wish I could just have one day, go back in time, and be able to talk to these people and say, tell me about where you came from and all that. But
see?
Yeah.
That's what I would have wanted to do. And my mother's parents, I never met. And my father's parents, my grandfather, I used to sit in his lap, and he used to tell me stories. And I used to know them by heart. I can't remember a single one. I would one day need to go to a hypnotist and see if the hypnotist can pull those stories back, because they were precious.
Oh, I'm sure they were. And now, where were you actually born and raised? Was it in Southern California?
I was born in Hungary.
Okay.
We escaped when the Russians came during the Hungarian Revolution. So I am actually a refugee and an immigrant.
That is very interesting. And you, how far back do you know about the history of your family?
Well, a bit. My brother is kind of passionate about that. And he and my cousins in Israel put together a history of my mother's side of the family. And it goes way back to rabbis in Poland and so forth, probably 300 years. But I know nothing about my father's side of the family past my grandparents. And frankly, between you and me, I don't even know my grandparents' actual names. You know, they were, you know, whatever you say in Hungarian for grandmother or grandfather, and that's all they were, because I was very young when they died.
That's why your first idea of, you know, recording things would have been a great idea, really. And it would have been, actually, Eva, you know, if you could have done that, you could have probably been a multimillionaire today with that idea.
I don't know if I would have been a multimillionaire, but I would have been
a millionaire. How about a millionaire?
More footloose and fancy free. And one of my clients just died last year, and his wife is still with me. And he was literally a vagabond. He helped invent backpacking, you know, and helped invent the specific kind of backpack that's used today, you know, with one of the manufacturers, because he was using it on his travels. He literally walked and hitchhiked around the world to remote places where he didn't speak the language. They didn't speak any other language. He managed to stay with native peoples in Nepal, in Africa, Asia, whatever. And he took film. He took film of all of that. And he was one of the founders of the Explorers Club and other clubs like that, a couple of other clubs. And he has such a wealth of material that, unfortunately, you know, he died before any of it got really put down or translated. And his wife's trying to archive them with the help of the Getty Foundation and you know, save some of those things. But we had this wonderful memorial, and the people from the Explorers Club showed some of the videos that he took with this little handheld crank video kind of camera. And the colors from this thing from like 1950 are amazing, are shockingly clear. So, you know, he didn't become a millionaire, but he had a ball. And that would have been fine for me.
Did he invent a backpack? Or I misunderstood you.
More or less, he worked with one of the backpack manufacturers to develop one that would work for people who really do real backpacking, not the yuppie kind, but, you know, for real traveling. And so, yeah, he was instrumental in inventing and designing some of the backpacks that are now in use.
And can I assume he did not have any patents on that?
No, he was doing it with the owner of the company, and you know, as a result, he got lots of freebies and stuff. And he was also apparently one of the founders of the San Clemente Surf Club. So when they, you know, got his ashes, the members of the surf club, and, you know, the guy died about 80, when the members of the surf club all got together and they took his ashes and did one of those ceremonies where, you know, the surfers all circle, you know, in the ocean and do their memorials. So, I would have liked to have been Bob.
Were you able to travel at all? You were talking about you would like to have traveled. Did you get to travel at all? Or did you basically just say, well, I'm not going to be an author, all right? And I know you said you wanted to go into something where there was some type of steady living, all right? Is that what you did? You went in and majored in accounting and became an accountant? Or did you actually get to travel at all before that happened?
I did both. I got to travel. I got to spend a summer exploring Israel and Europe. And I didn't have a backpack, but I had a shoulder bag that was about 1.5 by 1.5 square. And my snorkel to wander around Israel, I practically hitchhiked around Israel, but they have the bus, you know, the Egged there. And my aunt had stories. My aunt had stories. I took some of her stories down, but I wasn't there long enough to get all of them because she has such an amazing memory. And although I visited her several times, I couldn't get her to record them, you know, sitting there alone. That's not quite the same.
Right.
So, you know, traveled Europe, Israel, the Bahamas, Mexico, various places, but not the kind of hidden, you know, where the people are, you know, off the tourist path places, except perhaps in Israel.
So you decided to major in accounting, correct?
Yes.
And did you take up an interest in taxation immediately, or did you do something else before you got involved in taxation?
Oh, don't be silly. Accounting, taxation. If you take a tax class, you know, they test you on things that change every time, every single year. You know, what a stupid thing to have to learn. I thought, I'm never going to do this. This is absurd. No, actually, I had planned to become the next vice president of international business for IBM. So I majored in international business, and in the course of doing a lot of temp work, you know, for account temps, accountants overload. Remember those Bob commercials? I was Bob.
Who is Bob?
Those account temps commercials?
Is that a local California thing?
Oh, is that only California? I thought it was national.
I've never heard of that. Bob's big boy, but not Bob's.
No, they did these commercials about when you need help, you know, this is the guy who's going to come in and save your company. So what I had to deal with the agency, you know, this was Robert Half. I had to deal with the agency that anytime one of their temps walked off a job because they were pissed at the employer, or the employer fired them because they were incompetent to send me in to fix the job. And so I got paid a little bit extra, and I had some really terrific experiences with those employers nobody wanted to work with, and got job offers everywhere. But there was one company, and it was called CompuCorp. They were making computer systems, early computer systems for the brokerage, the stock brokerage industry. And the vice president of finance and I used to hang out together in the morning, and he was from Arthur Andersen.
Right.
And I was working on my master's at the time, and he kept trying to convince me that I had to get my CPA now while I could afford to take a cut in pay. I really, really wanted to get involved in international marketing, and they had a department there that did that, and I got job offers from every department in that company except for the guy from Castor Horst in charge of international marketing. But Minto and I convinced me I had to get my CPA, and so my rabbi's wife, my friend, who was a rabbi, the Rebbetzin, talked to her CPA and got me a job at a company that became part of Ernst while I was still there.
Oh, okay. So you got into the tax department? Would you?
And the partner, it was one partner firm, the partner said, look, we really can't use you in audit. We're not going to guarantee you're going to get any audit hours, but we're going to put you in the tax department. Okay,
Did you get it? When I first went into public accounting, if you were not a lawyer, CPA, they would not take you into the tax department. And that left the audit department. And I found auditing, and this is going to be my personal opinion, but I found auditing as exciting as watching paint dry. It was the most boring thing. I remember sitting in a safe of a securities firm on Wall Street, and we counted these securities. All right, and we had to wear suits back then.
Yes.
Here it is. I come in with the nicest three-piece suit, and I'm going into a vault to count securities. All right. And, you can only take so much of that I think in many respects. And I stayed 3 years in public accounting for different firms, not the same one. Mm-hmm. But I found auditing so dry. Now today there's more choices. Advisory services, all types of, but
we have more options now.
Yeah, which is great, and I wish they had that back when I was out of school but that was the time of the Flintstones, and we were only writing on caves. Do you remember that? Well, you're younger than I am. Okay.
Well, I actually got to conduct, I actually did get to do audits, some of them voluntarily and some of them not. Cheryl Teague's cousin was my partner at the Rim of the World. We audited the Rim of the World school district. And so that would have been the audit that I did more or less on my own that I could have gotten credit for. But no, if I can be honest, and this has gotten me into trouble, when I was doing a class for NATP, somebody complained that I said this. But here's what happened. I was with this firm, and about 6 months, I'd never gotten a review on anything. And finally, about 6 months in, the partner calls me in and he says, has anyone ever talked to you about your work? I said, no, I've only gotten, compliments mostly. And the audit manager had left to start his own firm, and he and I had been on very good terms. And he says, well, you need to understand something. You need to follow the audit program exactly. I said, well, yes, I did that. But we were auditing some division of Ford, and they were making parts. And, being a cute young thing, hanging out, going down to the, this was like a factory kind of place or assembly place, and they'd have the food trucks that come by during the breaks. And so I'd go down there, and, the guys on the line would flock around and talk to the pretty girl, and they would tell me what was going on. Well, they told me they were going to strike, and they told me why they were going to strike, and I actually saw a reasonable solution on how to prevent the strike that would have been acceptable to everyone concerned. So I was so proud of myself at having discovered this information, and I put it in my notes. And the partner says, do you understand what you have done? Do you know who pays us for these audits? The company doesn't want this. If you put this in the notes, we have to put it in the audit report. We don't want to know that there's going to be a strike. That's why we want you to narrowly focus on just what we told you to focus on, because we don't want this in the audit report. So my trust in audit reports and my respect for the company and the firm dropped dramatically in that moment. He says, you're welcome to stay and finish out your time, but you are not suited for this industry. So I went back to my office, made a phone call, went up. This was a Union Bank building, about 12 stories. I went up 4 stories to talk to the CPA that owned that firm, and he hired me on the spot. So I gave my 2 weeks' notice.
Oh, and where'd you go from there?
What firm? It was another national firm.
And they were more honest?
Meticulously honest. And I learned so much there. The partner was a really great, he was very good at what he did, excellent teacher, but a really horrible boss. And he merged with another CPA in the area. I pulled him in. And I didn't have any authority, but he put me in his office and told me not to let anything out of that office that didn't meet his standards. And I'm essentially a junior, right? You know, not anything else. I don't have the authority to prevent anything from being sent out. And there are other staff there. And the first client I called to review the contents of their balance sheet, and Bernie was meticulous about tying out every single line on every part of the balance sheet and income statement. When I started going through the information with this young man, we learned most of the assets on their books hadn't been with the company for 10 years or more. This new partner had really sloppy accounting practices. So I was told never to talk to clients again. But ultimately, you know, within a year, I left because their business practices and their staff practices were so bad. I had a 4-page outline of what they needed to fix, and everybody in the office wanted to sign it. And I told them, you can't do that unless you're ready to quit. So the new partner sat down with me, and he agreed, you know, that yes, we do need to fix those things. So I did leave. That one client that I called that learned all of this about his company's books stayed with the firm, but then started dating me.
Well.
So accounting can be a lot of fun. It's
it
very
well,
exciting another, and up and down, yes.
That's another show, you know. Anyway. I would love to talk to you about the Trump Tax Act, cut, whatever it's called, Trump's tax, all right? But we are just about out of time. And by the way, let me just say this. If you want complete independence when you go in and do an audit, all right, there has to be no fee being changing hands between the client and the CPA company, CPA firm, all right? Hey, when they're paying, you know, for the audit, all right, the CPA firm doesn't want to lose the client. So I used to see they would do just about anything to make the client happy. All right. Now, by the way, do not repeat that. All right. But that's the cold, hard facts. And I used to say, why do we have to have an ethics exam after we pass the CPA exam? Because there really are no ethics in public accounting that I saw. So anyway, Eva, I don't know if that story is even worth talking about, but Eva, thank you very much, and I'd like to have you back at another time if you have some time, and I'd like to have you talk about what you think of the Trump Tax Act without being any defamatory, you know, comments or anything about the Trump Tax Act, but I'd like to hear what you have to think about it, and I'll tell you something. When I was writing the CPA review books for that, it was very complicated. Something like the qualified business income deduction. Is that right? Is that
right? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Section 199A.
Yeah, I read like 5 different articles about that in order to, this is before I had your book. And, all right, everyone And every article had a different interpretation of that law. So it was really a nightmare. And I want to thank the Trump administration for that, and also the Congress who signed it, whatever. But anyway.
Yes, Eva, please thank them.
Yeah, we love them all. Now, Eva, please take care of yourself. Thank you so much. And after looking out the window here, I wish I was in Southern California. But one day I will get there, and hopefully we can get together and see each other again.
That would be wonderful. And to everybody listening, have a less taxing day.
Oh, I like that. Anyway, this is Phil Yeager, and I want to thank you for listening to the CPA Review, and I think it's other. I forget what we call it.
And more.
And more. Thank you very much. That's Rob. Upper
and East. Lots more.
Yeah, lots more. Today would be more of the what? Lots more. But anyway, please, once again, write in if you want to hear any topics that might be of interest to you. And if we don't hear from you, we'll come up with the topics we think are of interest to us. So, anyway, thank you very much, everyone. We appreciate you listening, and have a real good day. Take care now.
Thanks again for listening to CPA Review and More with your host, Phil Yeager of Yeager CPA Review. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like to hear about on the podcast, let us know. We want to hear from you. Send your feedback to podcast@yeagercpareview.com. If you're in the market for a CPA review course or simply want to know more about the CPA exam, check out the yeagercpareview.com website. And don't forget, when you're purchasing that all-access bundle course through their website, use promo code PODCAST to get 15% off your purchase. If you haven't already, please don't forget to like and subscribe to the podcast so you receive those notifications when new episodes are available, and help spread the word. Like and share the podcast on social media so your friends and family, colleagues who may be interested in the podcast, can also see what we have to offer. You can now listen to CPA Review and More on more listening platforms such as Spreaker, YouTube, Spotify, and the Apple iTunes podcast app. Until next time, have a great day and enjoy your week.